Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is the Toffee Web Podcast.
Branthwaite, now McNeil. It's gone in nicely for Dan Juma. It breaks Fulham's way initially, then the shot comes in, and now it's in from Beto! It ballooned up into the air, and he's done it again in the League Cup for Everton. He's got them back in it with an equalising goal. That is full-time at Goodison Park. It's finished one apiece, a penalty shootout at Goodison Park. It's a short run-up from Beto, and he scores for Everton. McNeil then with Everton's second spot kick, successful, and he batters it home, and that is character. Dan Juma and confidently strokes it home. De Cordova Reed, the jinking run and the save from Pickford. Everton have a chance to win it now. Amadou Onana from the penalty spots to send Everton to the semi-finals of the League Cup, and he's failed to do so. Sudden death it is at Goodison Park. Idrissa Garnacé, oh, he's hit the post. Jordan Pickford needs to save, and he can't do so. And Fulham squeeze it past the Everton goalkeeper.
Hello Blues, it's the Toffee Web Podcast, and it's another case of hello darkness, my old friend, when it comes to Everton at the League Cup. The Toffees had one foot in the semi-finals and just needed a penalty kick from Amadou Onana in the same vein as the four that preceded him, and they would have been in the last four for the first time in 7 years. Alas, that's not what the Belgian elected to do, and well, you know the rest. The mood at full-time was, of course, very different on Saturday evening after Everton's 2-0 win at Burnley that extended their winning streak to four games and put more distance between us and the bottom three. But with injuries disrupting key parts of the team and two really tough fixtures to come either side of it, it feels as though we're in for a bit of a winter grind. Given how raw and fresh in the mind it feels, we should probably deal with last night first, though. Andy, you made the long trip up from the southwest and what probably felt like an even longer journey back. I'm sure. Sum up your feelings 24 hours on.
I'm not over it. It had so many, there were so many moments last night when it could have been amazing. Goodison, I felt, was rocking last night. It felt like a really positive place. There was encouragement. There was lots of atmosphere. There was the ire of Goodison when things go against it, and it kind of rallies the team. And there was so much there that I thought, oh, I'm really pleased I made this trip. This is great. Even though we were losing for a large part of the game, I felt like it was a good night at Goodison potentially. And then we got the equaliser, and I could only see one team winning it. Even on penalties, I could only see one team winning it if it went that way. And it was just all set up, wasn't it? It was all set up for that moment. And well, I'm sure we'll come on to the ins and outs of the penalty. But to look at the game more generally, I was actually quite positive about us, really. I mean, I know it wasn't our best performance. I know we kind of missed a Decore. Calvert-Lewin felt a bit isolated. But I could see, you know, this is the first time I've seen this live since we've been doing quite well. And I can see why we're doing well. The hard work is there. The structure is there. All of those things. But the way I'm feeling today is just, I don't know. It's very easy to forget the last 2 weeks we've had in a moment like that. And it just seems to cloud. You just think, oh, if we just scored that penalty, if one of the other two takers that went after Onana had just taken the fifth, because they were emphatic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That one moment clouds actually. I still have the rational thinking today to think, well, we are in quite a good place relatively. It was just such an opportunity. It was such an opportunity. And I'm just waiting now for Fulham to draw Middlesbrough, and then the picture will be complete, won't it?
Yeah. no criticism from me for the players at all. I thought you're right, it wasn't the best performance, but you can't fault the amount of effort they put into the game. They worked so hard to get back. And bear in mind, this is a Fulham team who've, you know, they won a couple of games 5-0 recently. You know, and they lost 4-3 at Liverpool. You scored a lot of goals there, you know, and well, I know the last game they lost 3-0, but they had 10 men for a lot of that. You know, these aren't a bad side, you know what I mean? So, like, yeah, they got good quality in that team. So, yeah, probably like Fulham will feel like, you know, plus Fulham had something to hold on to, didn't they? You know what I mean? So, so probably drew us into a little bit of the sort of street fight they wanted, really, with, like, because they were just, you know, sitting on their win as it was, really. And then, you know, they just kept on going, the lads. I thought, and we started slowly, and then I thought, after maybe 10 minutes or so, we really turned the game around. And then up until Fulham scored, I don't really think they were really in that first half, you know, and that was an own goal, you know what I mean? So I've no complaints at all with the players for the effort they put into the game. I'm a bit surprised with some of the criticism. Not that there's been loads, but, and, you know, they've done so well this last however long now, and we can't lose sight of that going into these next few games. They've done really well, but we have to look at the penalties, obviously, more than anything, or the penalty. And I just can't fathom it. I'm so frustrated. I'm so so disappointed in that spot kick. I'm not sure why Onana was the fifth one up. I don't know why James Garner wasn't, really. I thought he'd be the man. Remember when Garner went down with that? Like, it looked like quite a serious injury. He was holding his ankle, and me and Stephen Exeter, we were saying, like, that doesn't look good, the way he's gone down there. That he could have really done his ankle there, or whatever it was. And we thought, like, well, hang on, he's probably going to be one of the penalty takers. You know what I mean? So we actually tallied off the other four as well. So it was like, you know, they're the ones you'd sort of back: Beto, Danjuma, Keane, because he's quite a good finisher. McNeil, good strike with the ball. And you thought Garner would be the most obvious one. But when Onana stepped up for that, I remember thinking, have you seen him really shoot much before? Has he got a backup for, like, you know, hitting a lot of shots, and he scored a few goals of headers and stuff. But, you know, I thought, is he your man, really? But to do that, I mean, if he... regardless, I'm sure they've been practicing them in training. I'm sure they felt he was the right choice. I'm sure they've looked at all them things. But if he comes up, if he runs up and hits it, and Leno goes down to his left and makes a really, really good, you know, really good save, guesses the right way and he saves it, then you don't really have too many complaints. You're like, oh, okay, well, he had to go. To do something as ridiculous as that, I'm just completely dumbfounded. And Linda and I were just saying off air, it's like, there's no ifs and buts here. If that goes in, we're in the semi-final. There's no extra time. There's no opportunity for Fulham to, you know, to come back into it. There's nothing else. That's it. That's literally it. You know. So gutted about, like, you can't get any closer than that. And to blow it without really giving Leno anything to do in the shootout. Really, it's just really criminal. So yeah, I'm so disappointed in that spot kick from Onana. I don't like to. You know, I don't like to jump on players. I don't like to single players out. I really don't. But that was ridiculous. Really, really. And it's justifiable people being disappointed with him today, because it was, you know, really below the standards to expect that in that situation. So yeah, very disappointed in Onana there. I can't really hide that. I've got to be honest.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I mean, that was not the penalty. Of a player who grasped what that tie meant to Evertonians, what a semi-final and a shot at Wembley meant to us. I mean, we've been through 2.5 painful, stressful, draining years. And we are, you know, the future of the club's still up in the air. We needed this cup dream, you know, to survive on, because, you know, with the points deduction and, you know, working on the assumption we don't get any back. You know, this season is going to be about avoiding the drop, and that's it. You know, we're going to finish mid-table at best. Obviously, we've still got another FA Cup, the FA Cup to come. But I mean, you know, it's unlikely we're going to get as close to a semi-final as we did last night. You know, and like you, Paul, I don't want to go in with both feet, as it were, on Onana. I mean, he's still relatively young. But he does have a bit of a swagger and a bit of arrogance. I mean, call it what you will, that can sort of cut both ways. And that, I mean, it wasn't the moment for showboating. I mean, nor was it really a moment for, as you said, Paul, he's not a player that has a track record for scoring with his feet or any sort of previous for handling moments like that. I think I have a tweet somewhere. I hate short run-ups, stutter step run-ups for penalties. I mean, you're giving the keeper more of a chance than he otherwise would in a situation that clearly favours the kicker. And to do what Onana did when the fella before you had just missed trying the same bollocks, that, you know, that just made it worse. I mean, it was just infuriating. You've just seen Deco Diva Reed, you know, try and outfox Pickford and made to look like an ass, and you go up and do almost exactly the same thing. I mean, I don't know. As you say, it should have been someone like James Garner, you know, who's a dead ball specialist. Dyche seems to be someone who puts the players out there, trust them to make the right decisions and get the job done. I think in hindsight, I wish he'd been a bit more actual Mourinho than Ginger Mourinho, and insisted that, you know, the right players at least make up the core five penalty takers. Because, you know, I mean, with England, we've had these debates in the past about all the preparation that needs to go into these things and the right players with the right mentality taking the, you know, really important penalties. I would like to think that Onana kind of lost sleep over it. Probably didn't. I mean, he just, I don't know. It was potentially a massive kick in our certainly immediate history, you know, our short-term history. And I just, yeah, like you, it's going to, like you said, Andy, it's going to take a while to get over that one.
There's so many questions, aren't there? So you would imagine that they have discussed, if this goes to penalties, guys, because it's very possible in this competition that the games go to penalties, you know,
100%,
because it goes straight there after 90 minutes. So I cannot believe that Sean Dyche would not have covered that during the week. I mean, I can't imagine that, right? So, okay, if it goes there, regardless of who's on the pitch at the time, let's discuss penalties. You know, this is probably off the field rather than on the field. You practice them, of course you do. So they've sent out those five players in that order. Now, they must know how Onana's going to take a penalty to choose him for the five. So Sean Dyche must know that if it comes to it, Onana's going to do a short run-up and see if he can outfox the keeper. Unless he changed his mind on the night, which I can't imagine, and in training he's been rocketing them in the top corner. I can't see that. So that they know that the fifth penalty taker on the night is going to do that. That does not sound like anything else we've heard or seen from Sean Dyche, does it? I mean, he's meticulous. I mean, he must have given them an order, or they've given themselves an order, and they must know that Onana's going to take it like that. So, to me, that doesn't feel like a very... You know, Sean Dyche is all about percentages and making sure you give, you know, the basics of the game are right. I just cannot believe that's a Sean Dyche fifth penalty taker on the night. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, seeing how Tarkowski took his, I would imagine that would be more kind of like, well, if it comes to it, we know that Tarky's just going to absolutely smack
just
it.
Just leather it, yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. If you're gonna choose someone to take a penalty who takes them in that manner, because they've obviously seen Onana take a penalty in training before, otherwise why would you say, well, you have the fifth then, right? Would you not let him go first or second? For a bit of balance here, Pereira for Fulham did exactly the same thing, but he's obviously adept enough, or he was just lucky on the night that Pickford went the wrong way. Because he took exactly the same penalty, basically. Now, but they put him second or whatever it was, second or third to do that. I don't know. I'm annoyed about it. This is probably why I'm kind of going over the top on this. But it just doesn't make any sense that that's your fifth penalty taker on the night when we've never seen him take a penalty before. And he's going to take it like that. I mean... If the goalkeeper dives the wrong way, we're all going, oh, wow, this guy's a bit special, isn't he? To do that, it's not the gladdest streak. But you need a level of something or other to be able to do that and pull it off. And I'm just not sure there's any evidence to suggest that was the right call.
No, same. I agree completely. That's really well put. I mean... Pereira had this little sort of shuttle though, and like sort of, you know, and he kind of put Salah Pickford on his backside always, yes. Didn't he? And then it's like, oh, I'm just going to roll it into the other corner. And like you say, there's a skill in that. And all this was some sort of weird, like, little run up, a little bit of a hop, and like, oh crap, now what do we do? Sort of thing. It was just like, I don't know, it didn't feel like that's even like how he'd normally take a penalty to me. Not that I know, because I've never seen him. Has he ever taken a penalty in his life? I doubt it. You know, like, not in a proper fixture. But, we were saying the same thing on the way home, Andy. Why was he number five? We just could not fathom why he was the fifth penalty taker. Why he was even in that five? We just couldn't fathom. But I watched Sean Dyche's interview before with Everton TV, and he referenced Stoney, by imagine obviously Steve Stone, but as the guy who sort of organised all that. Now, not in a sort of passing the book sort of way. Oh, Steve, you know, Stoney, there was like praising Steve Stone for how well he sort of, you know, has been working on the guys for that. So. They had been practicing it. They must have had some sort of faith in Onana to, you know, obviously a lot of faith in Onana to put that away. So you have to assume he's just been putting them away in training and just been, you know, looking really up for it. I still just can't fathom it. It just doesn't strike me as a ball striker. You know what I mean? But he's not, is he? he's a neat and tidy passer. He gets around the pitch well, makes good tackles, interceptions, gets around, a lot of high energy. Shooting isn't his strong point. We've seen that now for over the year. You know what I mean? So we know what his... what his strengths and weaknesses are. So striking the ball at goal, it certainly isn't one of them. I could go on and on about it. And I have been going on about it for nearly 24 hours now. I'm so annoyed about it. I don't know what else. I mean, you made a good point as well then about like Decot over Reed. He made a fool of himself doing it. Why would you copy that sort of that action? Honestly, I just don't know what else to say. It's so frustrated. I really am.
If you're going to do it, at least put some power behind it and put it in the corner. He didn't. He put it almost down the middle of the goal. You know, it's just annoying.
The goalkeeper caught it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was like a soft back pass, really, wasn't it? It was so routine.
I mean, all of those things you just said about Onana, you could actually apply to Garner Gay as well. I mean, we know he's not very good in front of goal. We know he's not a natural striker of the ball. And yet he's higher in the order than somebody, I don't know, who else was to go? Branthwaite was still left. Who else did we have?
Pickford takes a mean penalty, as we've seen.
You could argue Pickford, yeah.
I mean, I know it's all great in hindsight. Yeah. It's all great in hindsight, isn't it? But I, if you were going to choose, well, maybe we didn't know about Onana, but if you were going to choose the two players to from Everton to miss in those eight penalties we took or whatever, you'd definitely go Garner Gay.
Yeah, to be fair, it's just a Gay. I mean, there wasn't a lot left there, was there? It's lower down the order then. I mean, you know, I defend him for stepping up and taking it. You know, otherwise it's you're leaving it on the younger players then, and Fanfrey and Patterson. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's a senior player. He should be stepping up. Yeah, I mean, so, and yeah, we know he, and he, bloody hell, he did a lot better than Onana did. I mean, he was a little bit unlucky, wasn't he? You know what I mean? And, you know, another day it might sneak in. You know, so yeah, I mean, he's either seventh or the eighth penalty taker. You know, it's Pickford would have been a better shout, to be fair, but I didn't really think of that. But yeah, I don't really criticise myself for Jessica Gay for it, because at least he had the character to step up and take it. And, you know, as a senior player, he did that. It's hard to criticise him at that. He didn't make himself number five and do that, did he?
Yeah, no, exactly. I think he was in the sort of part of the order that you would expect him to be. I mean, I think he's taken penalties for Senegal before, so he can do it. The argument does come down to the most important, you know, spot in the order. If it goes that far, is the fifth penalty. And you need someone who's accomplished at it to do it. And, you know, we didn't. Andy, you mentioned that in our WhatsApp group that you were pondering on the drive back which player from Everton's past you'd have wanted to take that decisive penalty. Who did you come up with?
Well, I had a long drive back, so I came up with several hundred players that I would prefer there than Onana. but, I mean, you know, I grew up the first proper penalty taker that I can remember that always took them and didn't really miss was David Unsworth. And I suppose for me, I just imagined Leighton Baines walking up there. Having said that, I was also at the Leicester League Cup quarterfinal. So can you just remind me next year not to go to a League Cup game, because it's starting to grate a bit now. And Bainesy missed that night, having put a 30-yarder in the top corner to get us there. He then had his penalty saved. It was saved, wasn't it, by Schmeichel? I imagined, or in my mind's eye afterwards, I thought, well, if it was Bainesy or if it was David Unsworth, I would have thought, wow, we've won it, we've done it, we've got to number five. Here he comes. But no, not to be. I don't even know of anybody else that I would have truly trusted from our most recent past. I'll hand it over to Paul, otherwise I'm going to mention everybody.
One, I don't know if he ever took a penalty for us or not, but Paul Gascoigne was pretty solid, wasn't he? In them sort of situations. So maybe more realistically, Mikel Arteta was similar ilk to Baines, really, I think. Unsworth, Baines, Arteta were kind of three which you thought were very reliable from the penalty spot and didn't miss an awful lot. So any of them three, I think you're in pretty safe hands. Yeah, just for an alternative, we'll go with Arteta. But I'd have Gazza in the five.
I'd have gone with the bloke who last did it for us in that pressure situation, is Phil Jagielka. So, you know, I mean, Unsworth was the one that came to mind, and obviously Leighton Baines also, but, you know, with the caveat that he did miss that penalty. But yes, he was, you know, clearly one of our more accomplished penalty takers. Just going back to the game as a whole, I mean, I think we looked tired. It looked like a tired team that had, for long portions of that match, just didn't have many ideas. The loss of Doucouré clearly is a disruption to the way that we play. It's been a while since we've played that direct, that consistently. I mean, it was just a succession of long balls forward. And I think that the difference maker actually in the end was Danjuma, because he just added that little bit of guile on the left flank. which of his cross creates the goal, almost scores a cracking volley actually to win it at the end. But the rest of the game, I thought both teams were poor. Actually, they were playing quite a number of balls over the attempted balls over the top as well, particularly in that first half. But you know, having said that, we restricted them to almost nothing. They didn't have a shot on target until I think the very end of the first half. They'd gone ahead without having had a shot on target. I think we'd also had one in the first half. They look after the ball better than we do, but I think both teams were as bad as each other for long periods of that. On balance, though, I think on chances created, we probably deserve to edge it. I think if it had gone to extra time, you kind of would have fancied us. Yeah. And I did find myself thinking, you know, I'm quite disappointed now we don't have extra time because A, I hate penalties, and B, I just think, you know, the momentum was with us, and I think we probably would have had enough to get it over the line.
But in that kind of tiredness, and I think there was definitely a tiredness there, like I said earlier, I can see why we're doing well relatively, because there's a much better overall pattern and overall structure to what we do, especially without and there's an effort, there's a real effort, and you look at, you know, McNeil, who was on my side, obviously one of the halves, he just keeps going. He just keeps running, and he gets in the right positions to defend. And you've got to credit that massively. And I think that's where this Everton team has got so much better. It's just that appreciation of defending and appreciation of effort to get yourself in the right position. I mean, how many times? Well, something that struck me last night? How many times in the more recent past have we given the ball away in the centre of the pitch and all of a sudden the other team are kind of almost in? They've got 2-on-1 or they've got 3-on-2 or they've... And all of a sudden we're like, oh my gosh, what have we done? Now, last night, yes, we did give the ball away a little bit in the centre of the pitch and there was that kind of intake of breath from Goodison. But then within 2-3 seconds, players were gathering where you wanted them and we kind of just snuffed it out and it didn't really ever make anything. Where before, give the ball away in the middle of the park and we were all over the place. There's a kind of power of recovery now, which I was really impressed with. And you know what? I'll say it. I'm really, really pleased. And I was really pleased when I looked at the team news. No one can say that Sean Dyche didn't chuck everything at that. You know, we've said about managers in the past, especially in the League Cup, even in the years where we were actually all right in the league, you know, we could have had a good run at the Cup and didn't. This year, well, it's still quite dicey in the league, I would say. But he really did give it everything he could. And I think he deserves massive credit for that. And he deserved for the fifth penalty to go in, I think, because I think he might have looked at it like, OK, you're all knackered. Give me this one. And then we can, you know, it sets up a brilliant opportunity for us in a few weeks' time when we've hopefully got a bit of recovery in. I thought that was to his credit. And yes, it was two average, tired teams, but we definitely, definitely deserve to win that game on the 90 minutes. I didn't think Fulham did much at all, really.
Yeah.
No, but I agree. Yeah, I thought we were really definitely the better team. And again, I think Fulham, because they had something to hold on to. You know what I mean? But you haven't been the goal up in that second half. They they were happy to defend for nearly the whole second half, really. And eventually, I mean, you saw they were happy to get penalties at the end. You saw like Anthony Robinson wasting time at the end to sort of like rather than sort of try and get one last attack and like that's not that we'll take our chances with the penalties, thank you. So this thing, I bet Sean Dyche wished he could have taken the penalty. He took quite a famous one for Chesterfield, didn't he? Which is exactly how you should be taking them ones. But he's always talking about mentality, isn't he? But he's right, and it kind of brushes on the things you just spoke about, Andy. They fight hard for each other, don't they? They're pressing all over the pitch to try and get that ball back. They're so fit. If you go back, we're pretty much there, like 12 months now from when we lost to Wolves just after the World Cup under Frank Lampard, and we're a million miles from there now. where, you know, like that we're like, you know, for largely a lot of the same personnel. We're head and shoulders above there, you know, I mean, above that performance level now. And you got to credit Sean Dyche for that. You know, he's got them all working and, you know, believing in each other and working really hard. And it's just great to see it. That's the kind of identity to Everton that I, you know, haven't watched Moyes for so long. And that's just kind of what I was, you know, most of my, you know, what I've growing up, sort of the my favourite, fond of Everton memories, where the better David Moyes team, we played with a bit of flair, but, you know, didn't half work hard and we're a really fit bunch and we worked for each other. You know, it reminds me a little bit of that now. And it's just good to see sort of have that Everton back a little bit more. And, you know, they won't always play great, but, you know, they'll always give it everything. And that's what Sean's doing here. You know, it's consistency in that as well. So it's a real shame he couldn't go through. It would kind of make this Saturday's game like a little bit of a write-off, you know, a little bit academic almost, I think, because we've given ourselves a bit of distance from the bottom, you know, from the bottom bottom teams there. I think everyone, certainly me, would have thought, well, you take beating Fulham and losing at Spurs, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, 100%, yeah. you know what I mean? But yeah. Now it's like, well, we don't have a lot else to play for. We're going to have to sort of, you know, we're going to have to go to Spurs now. And, you know, I'm sure Sean would have had them there, given it everything anyway. But now we kind of have to go and give it everything and hope that we can get something and see what we can do. And it's a real shame, isn't it? Because with the deduction, we might not get any points back. But even if we get, say, 5 points back, that's going to be very, very difficult to sort of mount any sort of, you know, challenge for a European position when you're 5 points down. You know what I mean? Of course, it's going to be like nigh on impossible, even with that. So, you know, FA Cup, we haven't got a particularly favourable draw. We never get a third. When do we ever get like third round at home to Chesterfield or Bolton or, yeah, that, never ever. No, we've got to go to Palace away on the Thursday night. You know what I mean? So it's not saying it's impossible, of course, but it's you know, I feel like you're having to do it all over again when we've just done so much in the Cup. It just, I don't know, maybe when we come to it, might feel a bit more positive about it. But tough league games between now and then. You know, the league could look a little different and, you know, it might become much less a priority in a few weeks' time, that game at Sellers Park. So it's a real season changer last night, I feel. You know, like for a number of reasons. And it's just so frustrating we couldn't get over the line on that. But as I say, no criticism from me for the players for nearly, except for one kick, for nearly all, really, because they did give it everything, and Dyche has got them doing that game in, game out, really.
Yeah, and that mentality change, I think, is what's going to carry us through. It's going to be the sort of the key that gets us through what's looking to be a difficult period now, as the injuries start to affect the first team. You're speaking of Moyes, obviously that statistics that we hadn't won four games on the bounce without conceding since 2002, which is obviously David Moyes' you know, first full season in charge. There's lots of parallels with Moyes, with Dyche. And so, you know, again, from that perspective, you know, the way that he's got the team grounded, the way he's got them working for each other, you know, I think we're going to, that's going to see us through. That's going to see us through what I think is going to be a tricky period. And I think, you know, before the season started, we'd collectively regarded a cup run as a bonus. Again, we still have the FA Cup to come. And again, the Premier League, specifically staying in it, was always going to be the priority. So in that respect, Saturday at Burnley was another terrific day at the office. A fourth win, fourth clean sheet, as I said, in succession, and up one more place to 16th, leapfrogging Forest in the process. I think the consensus was that if we're going to lose Branthwaite, Gay, and also Doucouré, then a game against a side that's only won once at home all season was perhaps an almost ideal occasion for it. I mean, we couldn't have asked for much more in that respect, could we, Andy?
No, I thought it was thoroughly professional. And again, it wasn't vintage, but it didn't have to be on the day. We took our chances that came along. Right. They didn't have an awful lot, really. I thought they were quite poor, actually, Burnley. They desperately need a plan B, don't they? But they're not going to have one under Kompany, I don't think. And it was a hark back to those days when you kind of knew what you were going to get from Everton. You know, a strong, yeah, dogged, well-organised team with just that little bit more quality than the opposition. You know, reminded me of, I don't know, an away day at Wigan or an away day at one of the other struggling sides in the past kind of decade, where we've just kind of, we are just slightly better than them, and we've proved it. I thought it was just a truly professional performance, and at that point, well, not that last night's really affected my view on it, but at that point I was thinking, wow, I mean, what is the ceiling for this lot? You know, we're scoring goals from different sources. We're scoring with players coming into the team. I mean, massive shout out to Ben Godfrey and Michael Keane for the performance at Burnley. I thought they were both brilliant, and that was a fantastic sign that players that we were doubting a month ago are actually able to just slot back in. And I mean, even Keane last night, there were a few moments where he juggled with the ball, as Michael Keane tends to do, but really he was quite solid. Didn't really do anything wrong. So it's great to know that they can slot back in. I thought that one, if the Fulham game was a kind of season changer in one way, I think going to Burnley and being that dismissive and that professional and that routine about it was also a season changer, or maybe a thinking changer in the short term. Like the fact that, oh, we can do that again now. We're not going to do something really strange at Burnley, having beaten Chelsea and Newcastle. That's heartwarming. So I mean, that would, to me, just gave me even more confidence in the kind of the platforms that are being made, built, foundations that are being made by this team. And it's interesting, the narrative, isn't it, that other football fans start talking to you. Like, you know, a month ago, it was all about the finances and all about the deduction and all about the blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, people are going, Sean Dyche is doing a good job, isn't he? and as you know, I've always been a huge fan of Sean Dyche. And I hoped he would get to this stage of having a really good crack at the whip. And he's, once again, the sign of a good coach, everybody, he's getting the best out of the group he's got. And Burnley was another massive example of that.
I remember, like, after the game, I thought, like, if I was a Burnley fan, I'd have been really disappointed in that. I don't want to talk about too much about Burnley, obviously. We want to talk more about ourselves. But, yeah, it felt like, to me, like a bit of an opportunity for them in a way. Were we 4 points above them or something like that going into the game? It was a little bit of a 6-pointer. We had injuries, suspensions, and it's Sean Dyche coming back and a couple of ex-players. And you always want to get one over on them, don't you? You know, even if you do admire them and respect them, and they did a good job for you. They barely laid the governors, really, did they? It was pretty comfortable, that. And we never got around to doing a podcast specifically on this, but did we before this call? But yeah, I remember thinking, Good on the squad players there, yeah. Michael Keane and Ben Godfrey, and you say Lewis Dobbin as well, coming off the bench and scoring that goal against Chelsea, and then obviously coming on for 45 minutes and doing okay, I'd say. Again, if you're going on to last night, Dan Juma coming on and making an impact in the game, Beto coming on, making an impact in the game and scoring. Dan Juma put away his penalty as well, so. I think we're at the point we're having to see more of these players now, aren't we? Just purely because of the... I think we expected injuries to come and all that, but it feel like they come very, very thick and fast all at once. You know what I mean? Very, very... Just for sudden. It's kind of happened, hasn't it? And that'll happen with a small squad, and that's where you got to... Yeah, they've all got to dig in and do the best. So, as you say, dismissive, really, wasn't it? It was really a very, very comfortable win. And I think the key thing is just putting that big, big chunk of daylight between ourselves and the bottom three now, which is why, obviously, a win last night would have just been amazing, because then we could certainly go into this game at the weekend going, like, honestly, we can lose this. I'm not saying you want to, but, you know, it really, you know, you really let them off if they you know, came in a bit, you know, a bit rubbish, a bit knackered, and, you know, just didn't get much out of it. Make a few changes, you know, and get out of there, because they'll have earned that in a way. But good effort at Burnley. I was really impressed.
Yeah, I don't think we shouldn't really lose sight of how we felt after Burnley. I mean, last night was a gut punch and perhaps a bit of a reality check, in that, you know, even on our worst days, you know, we're still going to have problems getting things over the line. Interesting from the formation standpoint that against Fulham last night, he actually put Branthwaite as left back, doing his best Jordan Lesko impression, rather than go with the back three. And looking ahead now to the visit to Tottenham, do same again, or do we revert back to that back three that we deployed at Burnley?
I suppose it depends whether Mikulenko's fit, doesn't it, really?
I'm kind of asking on the assumption that he's not going to be, but I don't know. I don't know either way at this point.
I mean, because if he's not, I can see Dyche thinking that three centre-halves might be the way to go anyway. Because it just, I mean, the way Spurs play, it's there's so many numbers bombing forward in the centre of the pitch. I mean, I can see him going three at the back. I suppose it would be the three that played across the back four last night, plus McNeil one side and Patterson the other, which is quite harsh on Ben Godfrey, actually. But I suppose it feels like Dyche prefers Keane to Godfrey. If we're going to do a pecking order, it feels like if there's a centre-half spot, Keane will get it before Godfrey, but that's not to suggest that Godfrey did anything wrong, really. I suppose neither did Keane. But I can see him going with three at the back, which makes it a five if we are under the cosh. It gives him a chance to maybe get still the same bodies in midfield. It's just what we do. Again, depends whether Decore's fit. I mean,
he won't. I think he won't be. Dyche has said it's unlikely that he will be.
Right. Okay. So, in which case, what are we thinking beyond the three? Obviously, beyond the five that I've just mentioned, will it be a three man midfield with potentially Danjuma behind Calvert-Lewin, or will he play? I mean, he's got Onana, Garner. There's a three-man midfield, yeah. You'd think.
Those three, yeah.
And then, well, does he play Beto? Does he play Dobbin? Does he play Harrison? Probably Harrison.
Yeah.
Is a kind of a 10. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what he does. But I've forgotten Harrison, actually. Yeah, he would probably play Harrison. But I think he'll go three. Unless Mikulenko's 100% fit and he can go back to his four that was doing so well.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I was surprised to see because obviously we saw the team before the game, and I was surprised that they lined up like that actually with Branthwaite at left back. I thought it was going to be the three at the back. Now maybe it's I didn't really see really I couldn't really tell exactly how Fulham were lining up, but maybe it was something to do with countering how Fulham play by having the four there instead of having a five. Maybe wanted to go for it a bit more at home. I don't know, but I thought that, you know, that they seem to, the times they played that three at the back, it's kind of worked quite well. Most of the time you think back to the you know, scrambled some for the way at Wolves last season, the Bournemouth game, which we had to win, and we had to go into this, you know, three at the back system and did it away at Villa in the cup this season, surprised everyone with that, away at Burnley, you know what I mean? So it seems to work quite well. Maybe they got the right personnel for it. So I think with all the injuries and that, it's it might be assuming Mikulenko is not available, it might be the safest assumption to go with the three at the back. We'll have to see who's available. There could be knocks and bumps from, you know, from yesterday as well.
Yeah.
I'd say it was quite a feisty game, the likelihood is there is, you know, and like you got to think about fatigue and all that as well. So there might be even a few less bodies available than what we think we've got. So we'll just have to go and see what there is. And it just kind of feels to me that, yeah, I didn't mean to sound too defeatist. It just feels like we're it's a real game we could do without right now. So quickly away at Spurs, we're really going to have to patch a team up here. They've had a couple of good wins. I watched them against Forest. They last played on Friday. Yeah, you know I mean, and they had the whole weekend off after that. You know, so they've had plenty of time. Richarlison's in the goals, and they look pretty good. I thought away at Forest, first time I had a good look at Spurs. But they're playing the ball around quite nicely. So it could be a tough ask that game, particularly on the back of the big effort they put in last night. So just have to see how they rock up and. It's just hard to guess who's going to be playing because I think I just think we've got such limited visibility of who's available and who isn't. Because I think there could be more to come from last night in terms of unavailability. Just a hunch.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's almost like clockwork, isn't it? December rolls around, all of a sudden the injuries just start piling up.
Yeah, it's only fixtures at once. Sean Dyche made a point like in this after match interview, saying like, you know, we're cramming so many games into December, and then in January there's hardly any. You're like, yeah. What is this? I get this point because it's all well and good if you've got huge squads. You know what I mean? Like you say, like, I don't know. You look at Liverpool, for example. One week they can play Nunes, next week they can play Gapco. One week they can play Salah, you know, Diaz. You got so many different options around. Just as an example, yeah. I mean, we really haven't got that, you know, luxury. So teams with smaller squads, teams with less ability, it surely affects them at this time of year because it's just not really a fair fight for what you're up against them. And when three of our games, are Chelsea, we've got massive squad and we've won that. And Spurs away and City at home, you know, it's really going to test us, you know. So it's it's going to be tricky, but I'm sounding really defeatist here, and I really shouldn't be because the team have been doing so well. And if you look at league form alone, particularly, yeah, you know I mean, we have to go and they'll give it a good go, I'm sure they will. I just worry about fatigue and injuries and what we're up against. It might just be a step too far on Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to have to be one where we just dig in, I think. I think he went for the formation that he did with Branthwaite left back against Fulham because I honestly think that he thought he could get at Fulham, particularly down with Tete down that side. I think he went for it, and I think that was the right decision. I think against Spurs, going with the formation that we had at Burnley and at Villa in the earlier round in the cup is the way to go. I just think that it's going to have to be a case of us really having to dig in because, as you said, Paul, Spurs are playing really, really well now. They had a bit of a hiccup, but now they're getting some of their players back. You know, players like Kulusevski are in like really, really good form. And as you said, Richarlison's in the goals, which could you just wait it just a couple more weeks? But hopefully we can keep him quiet. I mean, defensively, that's obviously been our strong point recently. So hopefully we can keep him quiet. But like one other question to both you fellas with regard to team selection. Dominic Calvert-Lewin hasn't scored since October. I think judging him in terms of goals return on a performance like last night, where we were just throwing the ball up against two very big central defenders, I think that it was a bit of a fool's errand as far as he was concerned. So I felt sorry for him last night because honestly I didn't think he stood a chance. But is there now a case for starting Beto, giving Calvert-Lewin a bit of a rest and a chance to come on and influence the game coming off the bench instead?
I think there could be because I think Spurs tend to play high. They tend to leave a lot of room behind them. And I just think the natural way in which Beto makes runs is different to Calvert-Lewin. Calvert-Lewin's qualities are, I mean, I think he's overall a much better striker than Beto on his day. But Beto's natural kind of those diving runs where he just kind of darts in behind. Like he did last night a couple of times, actually, and almost got in. I can see that possibly working against Spurs, whereas Calvert-Lewin's qualities, I mean, it's kind of combination play, isn't it? I'm not quite sure, especially with the players available. I mean, there was no one to play with him last night. He just had nobody around him. And Beto felt like a better lone striker for that job, and that might extend to Spurs as well. And I think going along what we've been saying is, you know, it is a bit of a free hit, this one, really, in terms of the quality of both sides, and the fact that we'll probably ask the same players or very similar players to do the same job again. and they've got fresh players coming back. I mean, it might be a good week to say to Calvert-Lewin, you know, have a bit more of a rest this week and come back for the City game, maybe. It just, you know, maybe there's just a bit of room for Beto to make those darting runs and just to be a bit unpredictable in a game like that. That's what strikes me. It also, just thinking whilst you were talking there, won't it be interesting to see what kind of Amadou Onana we get for the next game? Because that kind of moment, I think, is... I mean, having been there last night to see it, I mean, he just stood still in the centre circle for about 10 minutes. I mean, my gaze went off him by the end and I was looking at something else and all of a sudden all the players had moved away. But he was just standing still in the centre circle. I don't think he could quite believe what had happened. And just wonder, he's a young lad. He's making his way in the game. Obviously, he's learning all the time. But I'm just wondering what kind of Amadou Onana we'll get for the next couple of games as well. That's something that struck me just then as you were talking. But no, I wouldn't be surprised. To answer the question, I wouldn't be surprised if Beto got a start.
Hopefully, an Amadou Onana with, you know, the bit between his teeth and, you know, a point to prove and, you know, hopefully, like, well up for the game, you know. Yeah, look, I don't think he's got anything to prove in terms of, like, his, you know, his match before. I actually thought he was a little bit off last night. He wasn't, you know, I thought he had a far better game against Burnley. Actually, I thought he was really good against Burnley, Amadou, but, you know, he hasn't really got anything to prove, I don't think. He's a really good player. I just hope it's sort of... He reacts to it positively. You know, I think he seems quite popular in the dressing room. He's got good, you know, him and the dressing guy seem to have a lot of connection there. He's got good people around him who will support him. You know, I think he'll be okay. Don't think he'll be on penalties. I wouldn't be adverse to Beto starting. I think it, you know, it's we've really got to think like practically about rotating the squad around and, you know, where we can. And there's a clear opportunity there to rotate and, you know, give Beto a chance. He's just scored a couple of goals actually last sort of few games. So you could argue just goal threat alone as well. Because Dominic, obviously, it's been a while since he's found that now. I think we're a better team overall when Dominic plays. I think I agree with Andy. He's a better all-round player. But yeah, maybe he looked a little bit off it last night also, Dominic. Again, you make a good point, Lyndon, about the way we played didn't help him. But yeah, you've seen him play better than that. Maybe a bit of fatigue might be an opportunity to play Beto. I wouldn't be adverse to that. I think Beto's going to have to play one of the next two games anyway. And it seems like a bit more sensible if you're talking about rotating, you know what I mean, to do it this way rather than give Calvert-Lewin another task of sort of having to play most of a game and then resting him for the next one. And you've always got to, you know, you can't help that, can you, with Dominic? You've always got to back of your mind as always, not don't want him to get injured, you know what I mean? And hopefully he's over that. But I'd be quite happy to see Beto given an opportunity there.
Yeah, me too. And not through any real criticism of the way that Calvert-Lewin's been playing. You know, obviously the goals have been scored by other people and that's fine. I just think it might just be an opportunity just to give him a rest, you know, give him a chance to come off the bench and as you say, rotate the team, rotate the squad and try and keep things fresh. I think in terms of his physical profile, that Beto is sort of the closest thing we have to Doucouré in terms of, you know, just getting around the pitch and sort of giving defenders problems in that respect. So maybe from that point of view, given that we are probably going to be playing a lot on the break against Spurs and trying to capitalize on that high line. Yeah, maybe he's the one.
You're listening to the Toffee Web Podcast.
Time for the weekly question. And unfortunately, we have to return to Amadou Onana's horrendous penalty. Can you think of an equally or perhaps more maddening moment in Everton history, Paul?
You know, I was thinking about this, and I think nearly all of them include Liverpool games, which just shows how damn cursed we've been against them. And I always try to caveat this, like, no, there's been plenty of times we played crap against Liverpool and got well beaten and deservedly so, but there's also been a number of times when you're thinking, how's that happened and why? And I'll take us back to 1998, when we're winning 1-0 at Anfield through a really nice strike from Duncan Ferguson, and the ball breaks to Mick Almodar with an open goal. And I don't know what the hell he was thinking, but he just completely fluffed his lines and put it so far wide. It was a goal kick to Liverpool, which they knocked forward and scored within a minute from. So it went from what would have been a very, very good chance of Everton winning the game, because that would have put us two ahead. We've not loads of time to play, but instead we drew and it was 1-1. And it was just one. I was like... And still to this day, you'll see that. I think, how did that not go in? How did you fluff the line so badly? So I don't think it tops an honour yet last night. But not too far away. That was that was the first one that came to my mind.
There's been so many, haven't there? I mean, it's like this is like trying to choose alternative penalty takers to Onana. It, for me, the word maddening is important here. And that kind of focuses the mind a bit, because so much of what's happened, especially in the most recent seasons, which obviously clouds your memory and takes over a bit here as well, that's just left me numb. That hasn't really left me mad. It's left me with dread and like a numb feeling of, oh no, you know. Maddening is a very particular Everton thing. Now I've got three in front of me. I could fill four sheets of A4 off the top of my head, but I've got three in front of me. One was John Terry scoring in the last minute for Chelsea at Stamford Bridge.
God, that's a good one.
I think I was watching it where I'm sitting now. I think I've told this story before. I was watching it where I'm sitting now on the laptop. And when it went in, I actually hit this desk, right? I hit it so hard, I actually did hurt myself. With the palm of my hand. Because I couldn't think of anything else to do. And I swore. And I stood behind the chair, kind of got up from my chair. I kind of stood and just leaned over the chair just to check it was actually true from a different angle. I was mad. I was mad. another time I was mad, and I was, again, I didn't know what to do with myself physically. It was April 2021 under Carlo. And it was getting to that point where we'd been absolutely brilliant, and then it started to tail off a little bit, and we needed to kind of, we had to get some wins to stay in the European picture. Do you remember Michy Batshuayi scoring for Crystal Palace right at the end at Goodison? Yeah. He'd been on for about a minute, and I remember thinking to myself, oh God, not Michy Batshuayi. It was a sloppy goal. It ended 1-1, and then it kind of just started to fall away completely. And you thought, all that effort, you know, what were we at Boxing Day? We were second on Boxing Day that year, something like that.
Yes. Yeah.
And you could just feel it, the kind of the claws down the cliff were hanging on to something. And then Michy Batshuayi comes on and just rips your hand away, and then you're falling down the cliff, tumbling down there. I was mad. Mad with Everton. I'm mad thinking about it. And fine, I don't want to take them all off you, Lyndon, but I'm sure you've got loads of examples. the third one, and I think this was between maddening and numb, which is kind of the crossover point between the two. Burnley 3, Everton 2 from April 2022, when we went two Richarlison penalties, I think, if I remember rightly. We were in control of the game, and if we'd won that day, I think we could have all taken a deep breath from this whole relegation scenario. But to let them win it, not just draw it,
That's a good one. That's a good one. Actually, speaking of Carlo, the one just as you were talking, the one that flashed to me was the season before against Newcastle. You know that game where we turned up. I mean, how bloody maddening was that to throw away 3 points in the space of 2 minutes in stoppage, or 1 minute in stoppage time. That was maddening. But mine. The ones that I could think of all involved Liverpool. The Sylvain Distan in the cup semi final at Wembley. It was maddening because it did make me mad. And obviously, in hindsight, you can kind of think, you know, it was just a mistake. and in that respect, Onana last night was far more infuriating because there was a lot more thought that went into what Onana did than what Distan did. The other one, the main one, involves referees. I think there was the derby at Goodison where the referee allowed Gary McAllister to take a free kick 10 yards further forward than it should have been, and he floated that in over whichever goalkeeper it was at the time. Gerard. And then the other one was obviously the Graham Poll, where, you know, the ball gets booted in Don Hutchinson's backside, the ball's going to cross the line, and he blows the whistle right at the end of the game. And I was there and I almost spontaneously combusted with rage. It was unbelievable. I could not believe it. And yet at the same time, I could. So, yeah, I think those are the ones. I mean, but yeah, the longer you think about it, the more you'll come up with, because, you know, we've had 30 years of frustration. So I'm sure there are many, many, many more that you could think of.
Well, hopefully we get plenty in the comments on Toffee Web, and hopefully on Twitter it'll be nice to see. Yeah. It'll go on forever and ever.
It would.
So write this podcast if we're not careful. One more, can I just have one more? we got another hour, folks. we're beating Man United 2-0. I think Manny Fernandez scored that absolute beautiful goal when he just took a touch and smashed them. We're coasting that, really. We're coasting a bit much, but we're very comfortable. Then Ian Turner just does something mad and comes running out and just hacks at a player or something does something ridiculous and gets himself in trouble. Oh, yeah, he dropped across, didn't he, Ian Turner, inexplicably, and then they scored. And then we're still 2-1 up, and then the ball's coming, like it's going towards our goal, but it's on the goal line, and Lee Carsley's about to sort of just whack it clear on the line, and Phil Neville just playing for us. Phil Neville comes from nowhere and just boots it into our own net. He was going to claim it. And then obviously, man, you just gathered momentum and won 4-2.
Oh, boy. I can sense an Everton book coming on. All right. Thanks, fellas. We'll leave it there. That was cathartic in the end. I'm glad we did it. I'm not sure I feel much better, but it can't be helped now. Hopefully we can get a result against Spurs on Saturday to take us into Christmas. On that note, look out for our Christmas quiz podcast, either around Christmas or the new year, depending on when we can get around to it. That was good for a laugh last year, and we'll be doing it again this year at some point. But until we return with more chat about all things blue, on behalf of Andy Paul and everyone on the Toffee Web podcast team, let me wish everyone a really happy Christmas. And of course, up the Toffees.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.